Hi, I'm Terry Meekin. Welcome to Roving Report. With our nuclear power industry handed over to the French and Chinese governments in the shape of Hinkley Point, Rolls-Royce wants to bring nuclear power engineering back into British hands. They want the government go-ahead to build 8 small nuclear reactors in factories, and they will then ship them out to replace power stations which have had to be closed down because they have reached the end of their working lives. The man leading this British consortium for Rolls-Royce is David Orr, and I went to their operation in Derby to hear how he intends to put the nuclear power industry firmly back into British hands.
What we're trying to do is a modular nuclear power station. They're called small, but small is relative in comparison with the large reactors. It's about a quarter of Hinkley's power, round about 400 megawatts electric. That's the kind of power level that we're talking about. The big advantage of small modular reactors are removing as much from the on-site construction phase as we possibly can. Putting that into factories reduce both the time on site for the build and also give that certainty of delivery.
Are you saying there's no unknowns in this project? You could actually, if you had the materials and the money, turn it out?
There's very little in our system that's brand new. We are using the latest technology for nuclear, but it's all within the sphere of our knowledge. So the orders of magnitude of the components are known to us. It's a standard civil nuclear core, so the enrichment is very low enrichment, the same as existing civil fuel, so that's all known. The complete primary design is completed from a systems level downwards, so that's all in terms of what we understand and know within our knowledge, and our technical viability we believe is greater than 85%.
People do know Rolls-Royce as the provider of nuclear plants for submarines. Is this a scaled up nuclear plant for submarines, or is it a completely separate design?
It's a separate design. You can imagine with nuclear submarines they have specific different requirements than a civil power plant, so they need continuity of power, they've got to be very silent, very shock resistant, all the other things that you can imagine.
So when you say it's your expertise, where's Rolls-Royce actually built a similar or got involved in building a larger scale of what you actually want to build as a smaller scale?
Yeah, we've been involved in the civil nuclear power industry as a group for 40 years. We've done safety critical systems both in our own country. We provided major vessels for Sizewell B, which was the last PWR to be built in the UK. But we're also in a lot of the international supply chains, including America, China, Europe. We're active in backfits in Finland. What we haven't done previously on the large-scale reactors is an entire plant. What we are doing is we're leveraging our systems design knowledge of smaller plants and applying it to the civil design criteria.
So where's the risks?
The actual significant risks of the programme as we see it are in the civil engineering and the delivery of the civils part of the power station design. When you actually look at it in terms of what's delayed large plants in the past, there have been issues across the piece, but a lot of it has been around public acceptance, it's been around development consent orders.
Which might still exist when you want to do the SMRs as well?
It could do, but what I was going to say was we're trying to minimise that. So our intention is not to go on to brownfield sites such as ex-coal stations or things. We will only use existing licensed site for our initial rollout in the UK.
How many of those are there?
There's 8 that have been nominated by the government at the moment and released. And there's in the order of another 16 because it's all the ex-advanced gas reactors that are being decommissioned over the next 10 years. And also the Magnox sites, which you can't put large reactors on, and they're the same power level broadly as the one that we're going to put on. So some of the sites like Trawsfynydd in North Wales couldn't actually take a large reactor because it's inland and on a lake, but you can put one of our SMRs on that site.
You still need access to the cooling water, so I presume either lakes or sea, they're usually going to be beside us.
You can actually put ours on benign rivers such as the Ouse and Trent. So they have to be large benign flow rivers, as we call it, or large lakes or coastal.
All these locations you've got figured out in your mind, they've all got National Grid access at the moment?
The infrastructure is already in place because they've been used for power generation, yes.
Why does Rolls-Royce need government help if it's going to be such a good project?
Yeah, I think that what you'll find is that there's no nuclear development in any country that hasn't got direct government involvement. It has to be part of a national policy statement for nuclear, that's key. They've got to be involved as a government in the licensing process, so we've got to have, quite rightly, the Office of Nuclear Regulation, and we have to go through generic design assessment as a licensing process for the entire station, particularly the primary plant. We also, you rarely see that these are entirely commercially funded. In fact, they're not. People have different mechanisms, but you probably see for the large reactors, although it wasn't our government who funded that, it was the French and Chinese governments, and with that comes their supply necessarily into our country. What we're talking about here is quite a small, relatively small part of investment for this plant from our government, and that's match funding up to the end of the licensing process, because financial institutions will not invest until the license has been given.
So you want match funding up to the end of the licensing. What about the build and the commissioning?
No, we're quite happy to. We're quite happy that we can access funds on that, either from our partners within the consortium or actually through pension funds, sovereign wealth funds or private equity.
Mm. So how much are you looking for?
In reality, what we're looking for is match funding, and that could be up to £500 million over a five-year period.
What will the taxpayer and yourselves get out of this match funding at the end of 5 years?
Well, we'd expect the government to be an equity partner. What they will get is they'll get much more certainty of delivery, as I was saying earlier. They get a strike price or a levelised cost of electricity, which we believe is very competitive, around £60 per megawatt electric. And if you look at Hinkley for nuclear, you'll know that that's £92.50 as an agreed price. So what we're looking at is not just certainty of delivery and certainty of cost, but we're actually looking at the best and most effective costs for the consumer and also for industry in the future.
The government said, yourself and other similar people trying to generate new systems in energy, will only get government support if it's proven to be competitive with rival energy suppliers and sources. You're talking about £60 perhaps in 5 years' time as a price for the nuclear. But we're already under £57 on wind at the moment, whatever decreasing costs on there. If you're trying to sell to me as a government official your competitiveness in economic terms with the rapidly falling cost of wind, what would you say to me?
Yeah, I'd say a couple of things. I'd say that what we've done all the way through our design process and continue to do as we're developing is we look at the ranges in comparison with the other supply methodologies, renewables including offshore wind, and we actually look both for the first of a kind station plant and for the nth of a kind, which is about the fifth unit, because what we're looking at is a production learner curve within the modular factories I mentioned, that we take as much off-site as we possibly can. We haven't come across anybody in government who hasn't said that nuclear has got to be part of the future energy mix in the UK. Base load, it's essential to have nuclear. So one of the things is when you're looking at wind, it's not just the capacity that you've got, it's the ability to dispatch
it. But the government's already said that they want the UK to be a world leader in storage battery facilities. Are you factoring in the fact that these other projects are, at the moment, looking to be more economically viable than the nuclear situation? I mean, there are other reasons to go nuclear, we'll come to those, but yeah. From the point of view of the bottom line pricing at the moment, yeah. By 2022, £57 for wind, and you're talking possibly by the time you start licensing, but not by the time you start building, £60.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I think that the other thing you have to do is examine carefully the incorporation of costs for wind as well, because I'm not sure we're comparing like for like. So our price includes entire life cycle costs, including decommissioning costs. I'm not sure if you ask wind if that's the same. I think £57 per megawatt hour is for when it is dispatchable, not for its utilisation factors.
But I should imagine the decommissioning cost for wind, taking out a few, you know, turbines and that, is a lot less than it will be for the safety aspects of decommissioning nuclear power stations. I mean, I went to Barclay, and it's taken 10, 15 years just to take that to pieces. And then you've got thousands of years trying to find a storage site for the waste. What would be your decommissioning plan?
Our decommissioning follows the same standard as the current nuclear plants. And you'll know that they're waiting for a geological repository, which is going to be factored in by about 2040. But we'll follow exactly the policy that's there at the moment. When you're talking about wind being a lot easier, that depends on whether people ask for things like seabed remediation. And the other things is that the life of the offshore plants for wind are only about 15 years. With ours, you're talking 60 to 80 years. And you'll know in terms of energy mix that you do need baseload power. That it's absolutely essential for the mix. I've not heard any politician, including Treasury politicians and officers, who haven't said that nuclear is a fundamental part. And I don't see us as a competitor to the renewables, to be honest. I see it as a balanced energy mix between renewables, nuclear, and gas with carbon capture systems eventually.
What will this £500 million be spent on over the next 5 years? How is it going to be broken up? Who's getting paid and for what?
Sure. I mean, what we're talking about is the development through with the regulator of the licensing of the site. We're talking about, as I was saying, development consent orders. We've done a lot of site characterisation work. We've still got to continue with that. We're talking about investment in factories for the long term, because this is the development phase. And we are saying that there'll be three factories, because what our modular reactors require on economies of volume as opposed to scale. And just as we've proven in aerospace and other high technology businesses on marine and aerospace in our group, we're very used to going down production learner curves for our high technology products, and we've got proven experience and capability in doing that. But there is investment in factories. There'll be three. One's likely to be primary vessels and complex components. Another one will be mechanical electrical modules, system modules. And the third one, and just as important, will be the civil engineering modules. As I said, if you take the risks and the costs of the actual capital cost of a station, the nuclear plant's less than 25% of the cost.
So in 5 years' time, I presume you will have a list of drawings you can pull out of here, give it to a contractor and say, go away and build a power station. Is that where we're at in 5 years' time, if you get the licences?
That's correct. I mean, actually, we'll be starting doing that before the 5 years, because some of the long lead items we'll be talking about actually committing to these factories within 18 months of government committal.
But you're only asking at the moment for seed corn for a proof of concept, aren't you?
Well, no, this would be a commitment to the development process. The actual station would be acquired by a utility, which is why we've got a utility working with us as well. So what we have to do is make sure that the utility sees these as entirely acceptable and affordable to buy, which they do.
You multiply 20 SMRs by the same amount of output you're going to get for the large Hinkley points, aren't you starting approaching the same sort of price for the stuff generated?
It doesn't really work like that, because what you'll find is that the large reactors dominate in the south of England, which isn't a surprise because of population centres. When you start looking at the national grid itself, it's far more efficient and economic to have SMRs placed in strategic positions around the grid, which is again what we're talking about doing. One of our stations will power the city the size of Leeds. The three that we've been particularly looking at are Trawsfynydd with the Welsh Government and our government. We've also been looking at Heysham and Hartlepool, which are AGR sites at the moment. You're talking about between about 1.8 and 2 billion for a power station, and you'll know what Hinkley is, it's 9 to 10 billion.
It seems to me the concept's very much like the old IBM mainframe versus distributed PC processing. That's what you're doing. You're distributing your power around the countryside, which may have security benefits as well, if we ever get into a punch-up with somebody. These places that haven't got nuclear at the moment, or gas power stations, etc., you're going to have to put a whole regime up for protection, aren't you? Because you've got these funny little gentlemen who want to jump over the wall and pinch the stuff and hair off with it in the wrong direction. So you've actually got to fit in quite a bit of security costs for each of these power stations, whereas in a large location you've actually got a regime of armed guards and stuff like that. So I don't think, no, you could scale down the protection measures as you can do the production measures.
No, you're right. There are all sorts of ways we can scale costs. Security isn't one of them. We're subject to exactly the same security protocols and threat assessments as large reactors. What we are doing is designing for security. And when you look at the modern days, the only way that that can be beefed up with the older stations is by putting increased manpower on. There are some smarter and cleverer things that we think we've done in the design process to reduce those costs. But you're absolutely right. You've picked on it, absolutely the one critical area that we struggle to scale.
Mm.
No doubt about it. So you're absolutely right.
A simple question many people ask sometimes. Containment, why not underground?
Yeah, there's a few different things about having it underground, because you'd necessarily think it was going to be safer, but we don't have it entirely above the surface. We have got it recessed in the ground to a certain extent. By the way, the containment and all the backup systems are absolutely the very latest. So when we're talking about security threat, we have to prove that it can withstand a direct impact from a 777 aircraft.
What is the technical characteristics of the station? So if anything goes wrong, it self-regulates itself and shuts itself off. What happens?
Yeah, well, naturally for light water reactors, which this is, in physics terms, they have something called a negative coefficient of reactivity. And what that actually means in layman's terms is it's self-regulating. So that's the first point of safety. The second one is that we have all sorts of reactivity control, so there's the potential for boron injection, we've got our control rod drive mechanisms, and then if you have a leak in the primary circuit, then there's emergency core cooling systems that are both pumped and natural circulation, so there is an ultimate heat sink in the design where it's got a walk-away capability for decay heat as well. And you can have 72 hours with no intervention at all and still keep it safe completely.
Fukushima was swamped by seawater, which got into everything, the electronics and everything else, which actually brought the station to a halt. Are you saying that the technology you got now would have prevented?
It would. I mean, effectively what happened was that the backup generation, which actually we don't need, because the other thing I didn't mention as well is we don't need pump flow, it can be natural circulation as well, which those ones couldn't. The other thing on the Gen 2s as well, they didn't have an ultimate heat sink, so they relied on the backup generation, so they did have to do intervention.
So how does natural circulation work? Are we talking about cooling water naturally circulating around the...
Yeah, effectively. If you lose your electricity in your pump flow, then by thermodynamics and convection, your actual flow reverses and you get natural circulation. That's the way we've designed it. And what we do is we displace the steam generators, so it's got a natural driving head as well. So the overall system design is such that it's designed to be able to do that.
Who you got in mind for the first one?
What, for the first plan?
Yes, which location have you got in mind?
Yeah, there's three. We're looking at Trawsfynydd. The North Wales is very keen to have one on Trawsfynydd side at Magnox, where we've been and seen the local councils and the Snowdonia Development Authority, because it is Snowdonia, of course. It's a beautiful area. Mm. But they've been used to having a Magnox station there for quite a long time, for 40 years, so... they're keen to continue having nuclear industry in the area. We've also got two local events coming up at Heysham and Hartlepool, which are the other two I mentioned, and they're likely to be two units on each site. We're acutely aware of public perception, and we don't take anything for granted, and we speak to the local development boards an awful lot, and the local councils as well as the MPs.
Well, you're probably pushing against an open door where there already has been an atomic presence workforce and things like that.
Yeah.
What's the government's view at the moment? Are they pro-neutral? Are they sitting on the fence? And what about Mr Corbyn if he gets in next? You have to pay both ends of the book, don't you? You don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah, we have got support from the trade unions as well, who've raised motions. And Labour does support nuclear power, so we've been and seen them as well.
How much money have you got in the pot at the moment, Governor? How far can you go along this five-year plan?
At the moment, it's all industrial funding. The government have announced an expert financial working group, which will assess the economics and business case.
And report back when?
And the intention and the programme was to report back the end of April, May this year. So what we're hoping and anticipating is that we're very confident of our economics, and we're hoping to get a go forward from government around July time.
Government have got a very good track record in understanding industry. Who's on this committee that's going to be assessing this new development?
Our understanding is that they're going to use external expert financial advice from the likes of Ernst & Young, KPMG, who are very familiar with industrial business cases. Treasury are going to be on there as well. So, and we're actually discussing and debating bilaterally with Treasury as we go along as well to make sure we take into account their views.
So who's carrying the course of the spearheading movement at the moment?
So we've got contributors from across the team that I mentioned earlier. Okay. So there's a lot of confidence and faith in doing this and keeping it going. Then at the moment, you'll know with the large reactors, we have no UK solution at all. So it's not just the development and security of supply for the country, but it's export value as well.
But of course, all these places that are possible export markets for it, they'll all have to have very high, rigorous nuclear regimes. You couldn't just shove one in the middle of David Attenborough country, because there's no safety involved there in those locations. They'd have to go into developed nations with the industrial umbrella.
No, I agree. But, I mean, for development in the future as well, the Middle East are talking about nuclear as opposed to oil. So Saudi Arabia, for example, have just announced something around about 17.5 gigawatt programme for their country. Now, again, their infrastructure is developing on the academic and the regulator side, but you're right, they've still got much more to do. Our key targets for export are the Commonwealth countries, so Canada as well. They're talking about around about 4.5 gigawatts, and that's in the law.
Why not get them to join you in the consortium so they've got a vested interest in it?
Yeah, we are. We're talking as well, both with government and with our export countries, on doing binational programmes so we can start splitting costs.
The skills that you generate from the civil environment, will they be useful for the government's defence capabilities?
Yes, indeed. The skill sets are transferable in terms of systems, equipment, design, and also for the companies who supply in from the UK. It actually develops the same critical supply set for the standards that are required for both civil and defence.
Is there a time when you're going to say to yourself, we need a decision by this time, or we're going to have to pull the plug on it? What time scale are you saying to yourselves on your board, sorry, the government's not coming up with any answers, we're going to have to scale this back?
You know, our patience is likely to get a bit frayed by the end of this year if we don't have a clear route forward in the framework.
If we were to turn up in 20 years' time in the UK from foreign shores, what would we see in the amount of small modular reactors from Rolls-Royce?
We should have 12 operating SMRs in the UK, and I'd be looking for us to have at least 50% additional that are export sales as well. So 18 SMRs in the world with 12 of them in the UK. Our grid size actually would be around about 100 gigs at that time. With 12 on, that would be only about 5% of the grid.
So we still got to find 95%.
We anyway. Would, yeah, at that time.
Yeah. Well, perhaps I'll come along in 2040 and see how you've got on. David Orr, thank you very much. You've been listening to a Roving Report by Terry Meekham, where this week we've been at Rolls-Royce Nuclear Division. For more Roving Reports, visit www.terrymeekham.com. This is Terry Meekham, reporting on today and tomorrow.
Out on the street, I was talking to a man. He said there's so much, but there's nothing of mine that I don't understand. You shouldn't worry.